Every spiritual tradition has stories that explain the inexplicable. There are stories that answer questions for which there are no certain answers, or that give meaning in the stories that connect the stories to the values of the people. Noah's Ark is such a story in Islamic and Jewish and Christian sacred writings. The story of Noah's Ark answers several questions. What happens when God's messengers are ignored? Will this terrible thing wipe out the world? And why do we have rainbows? The story goes like this. God created Adam and Eve. They were fruitful and multiplied. Now, when reading sacred writings, I find it does not serve to get caught up in the rational details. It's a story. And often in stories, it requires a willful suspension of disbelief. Go for the message, not for the facts. Now, in this story, there were lots of them. First, there were Adam and Eve, and then there were lots more. So the earth is filled with people, and the people forgot about their creator. They stopped being kind to one another, and they stopped listening to God's messenger, the prophet Noah. Noah reported to God that he just couldn't get the people to listen. God said, maybe I made a mistake with this batch. I think I'll start over. And then, kind of like a sourdough starter works, God decided to save a few of the people and the animals. So he chose Noah and his family and instructed them to choose a breeding pair of each animal and to build a boat large enough to hold them all. Well, Noah did that, and he even invited some of the neighbors to join them. Most refused. Even one of Noah's sons said, nah, I think I'll just stay here. And then the rains came. For 40 days it rained. And then the land stayed flooded for another 40 more days. So you can probably imagine how tired they were of being in the boat, of being with one another, and of the interminable bad weather. Finally, the sun came out, but Noah wasn't sure there was anywhere to go once they got off the boat. So we read in the book of Genesis, after 40 days, Noah opened a window he had made in the ark and sent out a raven, and it kept flying back and forth because the water had not dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could find nowhere to perch because there was water over the surface of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark. Noah waited 7 more days and again sent out the dove from the ark. When the dove returned to him in the evening, there was a fresh olive leaf in its beak. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth. He waited 7 more days and sent the dove out again, but this time the dove did not return. So Noah knew it was safe to leave the ark and begin rebuilding. And here we are, depending on your news source. Some say it's still raining, others say it's still flooded and you need to keep your impatient self on the ark. For a few, the ark has landed and we're sending out birds waiting to see what they're going to bring back. And some say there was no flood, it's all a hoax. Whatever phase that you think we're in, this post-pandemic dystopian society that we are about to enter is not the same society that we experienced in February. Family relationships have been strengthened or disintegrated. People are out of work. Businesses have collapsed. Healthcare workers have risen in status. We've learned new ways to socialize, to serve clients, to worship together, to affirm and support community. Many of us have never been through anything like this. The oldest of us may have been children during the Great Depression. And their children may remember World War II rationing and the fear of polio. Baby boomers, like me, may remember getting polio shots and learning to duck and cover in case of nuclear war. Then in the 80s and 90s, there was the AIDS epidemic. I remember interviewing a man who had moved out of Los Angeles because 65 of his friends had died in a very short period of time, and he just needed to be somewhere else. People who were in New York or away from home when the World Trade Center towers came down talk about the trauma of that warning and then the post-trauma after effects that still impact our lives. So we all know after something horrible has happened, things are going to be different. But we can't predict what will be different or how those things will be different. We're occupying liminal space. We are not what we were. We're not where we're going to be. We're moving through the spongy grayness of ambiguity, liminal space. One of the characteristics of liminality is the anxiety that it produces. We don't know, and it scares us. We fear the truth before we actually know what the truth is. So if you're sitting with anxiety, know that you're not alone. If you are an awfulizer, imagining how terrible things are yet to be, if you are an unrepentant positive thinker, certain we will be better for having gone through this, if you are a conspiracy theorist, convinced that we are pawns in someone's nefarious chess game, take heart in knowing that none of us really knows. That for most of us, just like Noah on the ark, we have no idea what will happen once we leave the boat. Thomas Wolfe once wrote, "You can't go home again," and it's true. Even if you go home, home will be different, and you will be different. So as you prepare to emerge from your metaphorical ark, or you choose to sit and wait until the waters truly recede, prepare yourself for a world that cannot be imagined. Prepare for changes that you will welcome and changes you will abhor. What matters most is the management. Just as you had to learn to manage yourself while you were at home, you'll need to learn to manage yourself in this new world. We can't really manage the change. We can only manage ourselves in the midst of changes, especially changes that occur without our consent or consultation. The hardest part of managing change is staying vigilant during the transition. So as David White suggests, start close in. Start with the ground you know, the pale ground beneath your feet, your own way of starting the conversation. Start with your own question. Follow your own voice. Take a small step that you can call your own. Be humble. Be focused and be willing to be surprised. Noah and his family were surprised by the rainbow that appeared once they were out of the boat. So, in the story, why do we have rainbows? If we continue reading in Genesis, God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on earth." And Noah replied, "Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between this mystery that we call God and all living creatures on the earth." So step out carefully, my friends. Don't be in too much of a hurry. And whether you look from dry ground or from the window of your ark, look for your rainbow. Look for signs of hope and promise for a good tomorrow.